Yeah. Right.
Mystery solved.
Got that one nailed.
It's the only reason why I came here.
Just gotta find out.
See you next week.
It's upon superficial review. One is convinced that one is living a life. The slightest attention to it. You could say, with a skilled instructor, right? Someone that knows how to ask a question that just may not have occurred to you yet, right? So that's useful, right? Like you're like... You're on the verge of it, but you just can't articulate the question. Well, if someone presents a very, very simple question, you're like, exactly, that's right. I've been meaning to ask that question. I just didn't, I didn't know how. I didn't know how to parse it. But now that I've heard you ask it, that's exactly my question. You see?
I thought we were looking for answers here.
Are there any answers? I have lots of questions.
We get frustrated because we try to apply the habit of stitching and the habit of familiarity and the habit of universe creation. We attempt to impose that on our actual experience, which is a surreal liquidation.
We take thought formations, not reality, just thought formations about what happened yesterday, and lay them on top to try to make sense of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you get rid of those.
So you're like, you're like Jenga.
Whoops.
You're trying to build a citadel, right? But, I mean, the slightest nudge and you just, you're down.
Yeah.
So your ongoing experience, even if we could call it that, is a surreal liquidation. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to sit in a cave for a very long period of time to go, wow, yes, my actual experience is a surreal liquidation. And it's only through superficiality or superstition that I am capable of saying, oh, I was here yesterday. What was here yesterday? Find it. Show me your yesterday.
It's good news. You can't have a long winter. It's not possible.
No.
On the other hand, summer's never coming.
Right.
Now we frame our mood by investing in circumstances and events, showing up in a certain way that are pleasing to me. Like a squirrel stuffs or a hamster stuffs its right mouth with things that it's going to eat later. Right? We do the same. We stuff our consciousness, let's call it that, because our cheeks won't expand so much, with anticipations and self-soothing appointments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Or we fill our present experience with regret and anger and boredom.
Why is it that sometimes we do that and sometimes we do the other? It seems almost arbitrary.
It is arbitrary.
Sometimes it's just you can't get off the this sucks. And other times it's like, this isn't so bad. I got some stuff coming.
Yeah,
yeah, I can do this again.
You,
what the hell?
You are arbitrary. Go ahead, try to steer your consciousness in the direction you'd like it to go. It's not possible.
That's where we were a little bit in the conversation before was, I'm not in charge of whether I have the discipline to execute the plan or not.
No.
I'm not in charge of the things I do seem to do or stick with.
That's right.
And that's why you ate that pastry all by yourself.
That one's pretty predictable. Right in front of me, it'll go down. I was trying to fire up a just something that I used to do for accounting. That's a while ago, but you know, fire it back up again. Like, okay, we're going to do this again. We're going to tighten things up and really keep track. And it was like, oh no,
no,
you're not even going to get close to what you used to do. Like, it was not possible. I'm like, okay, set it aside. It wasn't going to happen.
Sometimes planning seems like it happens.
Planning does happen.
Guess we're going to go to Costa Rica, right?
Yeah, or even just like...
But what we call planning is also the presence of an involuntary surreal evaporation. It just is. Sometimes the planning works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you're in the right mood. Sometimes not. Sometimes the money's there. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you can have, you know, a dream vacation all worked out and someone breaks an ankle or gets diagnosed or hit by a bus or falls off the ship. As shark chum.
Break an ankle, I tell you.
Yeah, if you had a choice, right? I'll go with the ankle.
I think that sounds kind of painful.
So all of this effusive and apparitional unboundedness is occurring, is nonstop. Even calling it nonstop is weird, because it's not like it's actually streaming in. Right? All is just miraculously so. It's not like it came from someplace other than here and just arrived as if on cue. Where was this moment a moment ago? What was it, rushing through a wormhole to arrive here?
It's not pretty relaxing. You know, it just rolls out, shows up.
It's red carpet nonstop. You're in your, you know, best Hugo boss. Cruising the carpet on the way to get an award that you didn't even earn. Hey, I wasn't even in that movie. Shh, just take the Oscar and, you know, move off stage. But I'm not an actor. Quiet down. Just take the trophy and go to the after party.
Season.
Now, what's the utility, if any, in feeling your present experience as an involuntary, evaporative what the fuck that was never here in the first place? Is there any utility?
Not in a practical sense.
For sure not in a practical sense.
Well, we seem to want it because we think it's going to feel better than the mental stories that are happening up there. Right? I can speak for myself.
We'd like to.
If I see something else, then it'll save me from this.
What we think is
mind.
What we think is free is actually a dependency relationship. The way that we invest in freedom as a psychiatric emotive possibility is a dependency relationship.
Oh, like I'm a slave to trying to find a different type of reality.
That's one angle.
Yeah.
Or that something called freedom is going to fill me.
Yeah.
Right?
Which leaves me sitting here pretty freaking empty.
Mm-hmm. Or full. It's too weird to call it one thing at the expense of another. If this is unbounded, and let's say, just for fun, I pound the pavement and suggest that that's the case, even though it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's so unbounded, you can't even compare it to what does bounded mean and what does unbounded mean if it's unbounded. I don't know. It doesn't. Nothing lands. So the real nuisance is that we imagine that something's happening, that it's happening to me. Therefore, I find it unsatisfactory. Because I am, the presence of me as a durable receiving packet or entity is the definition of unsatisfactoriness, is dukkha. You turn out to be dukkha, not the shit that happens to you.
The problem is me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm self-centered, but.
Yeah. No, it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How free is free? Something is irrefutable. Don't ask me what it is. But are you here? Really?
This feels like a panel interview.
Yeah. That's right. It's your PhD. We're going to grill you.
How do I get this seat?
You know what I mean? Is here here? Is there there? Are you here?
It's your after... It's your... After death tribunal.
Like review?
Yeah.
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 Like Meryl Streep.
That's right. That's right.
We'll let you know.
Oh, God.
Let's look at when you were 10 years old in the schoolyard,
right? Yeah, you saved a dog from burning house.
Yeah, she saved the cat, and Albert Brooks was, like, terrified of everything.
Yeah, right, terrified of everything. Mm-hmm. You see, we take this for granted, that this is occurring, that it's occurring to me, that I'm finding more dissatisfaction that I'd signed up for, and I want to relieve, right, the quality and generosity of the dissatisfaction that I'm suffering from. And you don't see that nothing is actually occurring, and it sure as hell isn't occurring to you. That's what wipes your slate clean. But you don't see that because this is so pervasive. It's so good at what it does. We think that, no, I am here. This is happening. This is my life. I got my childhood issues and my adolescent issues and my parental issues, my peer issues, my, you know, oppositional right, disorder. I mean, I'm loaded, right? I'm just loaded.
Packed, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I'm here, and that my experience of being here happens to be sucking more often than I want it to be sucking. And I'm confused, and I'm without an anchor, and without a paddle, and my relationships don't work, and my meditation doesn't work, and my guru doesn't work, and my meds don't work. And what do I do? You see, in all of that spoilage and rancidity is appearing to what? The presumption that something's happening and that it's happening to you. That you're on the receiving end of experience as an experiencer, as a disparate creature with the dubious gift of durability or decision-making or will or choice. And so you want to be free as a dependency relationship, you see? Now you're dependent because you think that you're here. You think that this is happening. You think this is a place. You think that there's a genesis behind this. And so you want relief from the annoyance of your own experience to appear as I don't know, a drug, a guru, an enlightenment experience to set you free.
Being dependent on something outside myself.
Yes.
Being dependent on things going
yes.
my way.
That's right. So your idea of relief condemns you to a dependency relationship.
On something that is non-manageable.
That's right.
And has proven over and over again it's not.
That's right.
We kind of all know we're screwed. In that respect, we know we're screwed. Anybody that's lived and paid any attention at all knows they don't have...
But you can't find one in a million that's paid attention.
A lot of people act like they do sort of have it. You know, they got it. There's just not a chink in that armor. But most people that are listening to this, there's a big-ass chink in the armor of, I got this and I'm in control.
You see how the notion of self-reflection, self-accusation... the decision or the discovery or the insistence or superstition that you're irritable somehow and that you're going to apply yourself to do something about it so that you will come out the other end in a non-irritable manner. That's a dependency relationship, isn't it? Right? Once you commit yourself to psychological time, once you commit yourself to being of a nature of a creature in a volume, you're in a dependency relationship with absolute fantasy. And then you want to stop suffering in a dependency relationship, and you never will. That's right. See? Or not? So where do you turn then? It's like you're kind of forced, more or less against our will, because it's just too weird for words, to rethink the immediacy of your present experience. Rethink it. That's not additive, right? By rethinking your present experience, you're not in a dependency relationship with circumstances, events, and superstition. By rethinking your present experience, you're actually even just a little bit detached from the inertia of your belief systems to reconsider what your present experience actually is. And you might be able to reconsider it to the point of like, oh, nothing's happening and it sure as shit isn't happening to me. And no matter what the life looks like superficially to the likes of other humans, I don't really give a shit. Because I'm just not afflicted by this. Think of it as, you know, bizarre iterations of the possibility of freedom. How free do you want to be? Do you want to be free remaining in a dependency relationship with frivolity? Is that how you want to be free? It's not going to work. It's just not.
That's the bit chick ball and chicken.
Yeah.
But you got to give up you, the version of you that you think has to be a certain way or needs or wants or whatever. If you give it up.
No, the vocabulary is important. The vocabulary is important not just because I'm an asshole, even though I'm an asshole. The vocabulary is important because this is an immediacy. This is an inclusive immediacy which never departs from itself. You've never had anything that you could give up.
It's a muffin top, so it's...
Once any of us sign on to giving up, you're back in a dependency relationship with myth. See, the waking up is right this. You see how immediate it is? It's only this immediacy. You can only wake up with the blunt force of this immediacy. You can't come up with a solution. You can't. You just can't because this is this. And it's not going to obey whatever solution you have in mind to suffer less. It's not going to obey. You know, the suggestion box is never read. People pouring shit into that suggestion box day in and day out, but there's no one there to read it. You see? It's just that weird.
It just feels like it's such a life of its own.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you could say you as the miracle of being indeed have a life of your own. But even any association with this occurring from the point of view of, you know, accusing yourself of having any responsibility for creativity or suffering or enlightenment is just all nonsense. But all bullshit. Because this is just doing what it's doing. And we don't know what that is, actually. And one of its tricks is able to convince you that you're actually here and that this is a place to be. When it's not.
Seems like it's a place with a texture and an experience and somewhat predictability. Main course, beverage, $9 bakery item.
That's just superficial rumination in what appears to be, you know, a temporality. But you see, that's all imagined. Yeah. Because all of that's gone. All you got is this.
Like, hunger, the feeling of hunger is such a real feeling, you know. Like, you think, that can't be an illusion. I must eat.
Yeah. So what we call the body, you know, the conglomeration of sensual impulse, sensorial impulse, that wants air and food and water and other entertainments if it can get them. Right? Is too weird for words. What does mind do? It projects. But you're not mind. Not afflicted by mind. You could say mind is so. It's ephemeral. It's weird. You know, you're not really the owner of it. But you can encounter in your experience that mind projects. For instance, hunger and food and what you're going to do about it, successfully or otherwise, right? It projects. Mind projects. It creates dreamscapes instantaneously. And this power that it has to create dreamscapes instantaneously, with no delay. I mean, none. Really, no delay. The dreamscapes appear completely instantaneously with no delay. And mind is dreaming this dream within itself. And so it looks like there's space and time and hunger satisfied or hunger not satisfied. You can dream anything you want. Pain, pleasure.
It doesn't seem like we have much control over that. We're going to dream a lot of things. Most of us would pick one aspect, not the other. We seem to get a little bit.
There's no way you have control because there's no agency. There's never been any agency. Mind dreams. And there is no mind and there is no dreaming. It's not. It's thrilling. It's thrilling. Here's the actual moment. Whoops gone, whoops gone, whoops gone, whoops gone, whoops gone, god damn it, whoops gone, whoops gone. Right? So it has, there's no duration at all in the miracle of your experiencing. So that anything that you say about it is clearly apparitional. It's clearly untrue. You have to create, right, a partiality, as in I was born, or this is the earth, or I came here on a rocket ship, you know, and I'm allergic to kryptonite. right? You have to create. You have to turn this into something which you think you've got dibs on. This is responding to you somehow. And then if you're a crazy New Ager, you think that the law of attraction is going to turn out to be useful to you. Successfully attracting to yourself all of the superficial prurient interests that you just can't be rid of. Money and hair and notoriety and fame and enlightenment and lunch with Byron Katie. Shuffleboard with Vimala.
I did want to find a group of people who talked about this shit.
Uh-oh, this is all your fault.
I did too. I didn't even do anything. I didn't play it. You're fine, Night Sky, you know?
Yeah, I don't even know at this point. Somehow went to Pebble Hill's website and then got on Jeff's emailing list, which I didn't pay attention to for like 2 years. I never read them.
Slow trickle.
And I did. What's that?
Slow trickle.
It'd
be wild.
One, let's say, learns. To relax from the reflex of insisting on what this is. Therefore, you relax from the reflex to place yourself in time-space as a durable entity. And that, you know, relaxation is a bit of a clumsy word, but...
How are you tonight?
It's better than working hard at it.
Yeah, it is. That's true.
I guess we're hardly working for that.
And the relaxation or disinterest has no bottom. But you're not really even interested in how miraculous this can and does show up in your present experience. You're just not. You're just like, okay, I get it. Yeah, this is a fucking miracle. Okay, great, fine. It can do whatever it wants. Fantastic. I can see the moon and appear in my living room. I can cavort, you know, with gopis. I mean, anything is possible of levels that we haven't even imagined, right? And it's like, I'm a junkie for the most better it could be, right? I'm a junkie for the best possible experience. I'm a junkie for, well, if Ramakrishna was here, I want to be there, right? If Meher Baba was here, I want to be here. Where? Even in the midst of cathartic samadhis, enviable demonstrative spiritual states, you're like, so? Ramakrishna was one with God. He became Jagadamba. He became the mother of the universe. He completely transcended, you know, all and every superstitious myth that could possibly be foisted upon a dumb fuck primate. So? That's not even a fraction of, you know, what he witnessed. Which is the same as what you're witnessing right now. Without the Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Without having to go into a rigor mortized condition so that someone has to put honey on your tongue and chant Om in your ear to bring you back from traversing the Himalayas on a magic carpet. telling you, all of these miraculous spiritual beings, and there's a number of them, and they're certainly worthy of worship of one kind or another, but they ruin it for everybody. Because you think, one thinks, well, God, I don't have spiritual experiences like that. You know, I don't have spiritual experiences of that kind since I was 6 years old, having visions of the mother and this person and that person and incarnations and da-da-da-da-da. I mean, I'm from Long Island. I played handball. I was bar mitzvah in a a reform synagogue. What? Nothing's going to happen to me. Right? No, nothing remotely that looks like what Ramakrishna experienced or Prahlad Brahmachari experienced is going to happen to the likes of me. So where does that leave you? Next lifetime? Next lifetime when you withhold your semen and you'll have explosive kundalini experiences out of your crown chakra? Bullshit, fuck that. But you see how much fetish gets created, right? People that are still worshiping Ramana Maharshi. And orienting their entire spiritual life around the worship of Ramana Maharshi or the worship of, the hugging gal, Amachi, right? Matam Ritanandamayama. Yeah. You got to stop, or not. Because as long as we're comparing ourselves to Krishnamurti, or UG Krishnamurti, or Wayne Dyer, it's quite clear nothing very fantastic is going to happen in your fucking life. That's the good news. But that doesn't mean that you've all of a sudden lost eligibility to see what this is. Everyone will make fun of you. Right? I mean, you're not likely to show up on the world stage to give Byron Katie a run for her money. Maybe, but not likely. But so what? What does she have exactly besides more money than you? And a better attorney than you do.
She has a lot of fun. She clearly likes what she wants. Yeah. And I can have that.
That's the point, She's got nothing, okay? The fun means nothing. The money means nothing. The adulation means nothing. The students mean nothing. The website means nothing. The plastic surgery means nothing. She does not have anything. And if she associates her life experience with having things, I wouldn't really care to emulate her anyway.
She actually claims that the world will deliver an existence without problems.
She's a liar.
Not changing the outside world, but just completely at peace with what the outside world is. Like finding the good in no matter what happens.
That's a dependency relationship with not suffering.
It is.
It's not real. And she's lying.
It's give it to me because you promised me that I won't have to suffer.
That's right. See? That's the dependency relationship. Because this, whatever this is or isn't, is not about suffering or the end of suffering. Why did the Buddha say, I teach two things, suffering and the end of suffering? A big mistake. You really screwed up. What does suffering and not suffering have to do with this? How about nothing at all? Why would a guy commit his entire teaching after sitting under the Bodhi tree all day and night to commit himself to say, I only teach two things, suffering and not suffering, when this has nothing to do with suffering or not suffering? Why waste your time? Why waste your ministry?
I think I could teach a course in suffering. I think I could teach a course in suffering.
As well as he.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Non-suffering, I don't know about that.
Well, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. Teach suffering. You know what I mean? When you look at the meme that comes out of Buddhism and the pride, I'm not going to accuse the Buddha of having pride, but maybe he was. Who knows? I didn't know him. But everyone else that you know espouses it, like John Kabat-Zinn and all of those mindfulness fuckers, whether Asian or Western, doesn't matter. But they're on the suffering and not suffering bandwagon. But guess what? This doesn't care about suffering or not suffering. This is nothing to do with suffering and not suffering. So why commit your entire global ministry to something that doesn't even matter? When you see what happens, because once you sign on to suffering, you have a dependency relationship with not suffering.
Well, the whole what holds that whole suffering, not suffering together is yourself.
Yeah, but
that's
what
the only thing that really gives suffering or not suffering any meaning.
All right, let's accuse
me as a
Let's accuse the self. What's the self? Fine, show me the self. It's an idea. You see? I mean, I'd like...
The whole suffering and not suffering always seems to be an idea.
Okay.
Because the reality that just hear of it doesn't suffer. But the idea of, oh, shit, I got to go to work tomorrow, or, oh, man, it was a bad day, or...
Right.
All that stuff, that's suffering.
But well, is it really? I mean, here you are right now. This is the only moment of your life. This one. And now gone, and now gone, and now gone. Here's the only moment of your life gone again, and now gone. I'm sorry, where's the suffering?
It's,
where are the ideas coming from? And who becomes imbued with them? You? Someone else that's listening? You know, sincerely, affectionately listening. You can't say anything about anyone or anything, including yourself. And if you do, you've entered into a dependency relationship with a fantasy that makes it appear as if you're suffering, and if you XYZ, then you'll not suffer, and so the Buddha was right after all. This is about suffering and not suffering. You see how quickly this enters into and reifies or reifies, depending on how you like to say it, a total fantasy. And then you assign this fantasy to yourself as what? As the self, as a person, as a body, as a mind, as someone dwelling as the sufferer, as someone dwelling in a volume, right? That's going to have a better day tomorrow because it's on my calendar. You see, illusion occurs when? Here, now. And the seeing that means, oh, wow. Well, wait a second. Hold it. Hold it. Hold everything. Not that you can, but hold everything. Not that you can, but hold everything. If illusion only is suggestible right here, then you mean, well, I don't have to be the recipient of it. Your presence is not a sitting duck for illusion. You are not a sitting duck for delusion. You're not a sitting duck for suffering or the amelioration of suffering. Both total bullshit. Don't assign anything to yourself. Don't assign anything to your present experience. Don't come up with, you know, a suggestible solution as to what this is or isn't, or why something appears or doesn't appear. You see how you are completely free of any assignment? Here you are. You are actually completely free of any assignment.
Meaning any definition of who I am?
All and anything. Any assignment. Your disembodied radiance. And that's saying too much. Because you're not even that. Even that's an affliction. Disembodied radiance turns out to be an affliction. And just because disembodied radiance may be, you know, a clever or subtle way of referring to what it is that's happening or not happening right now, doesn't mean that it's true. Nor does it mean that you can be accused of it. Oh my God. You really are yourself, but you have no idea what that is, and that's the good news. You see, when you have no idea what this is, then you can't be accused of anything, or you don't accuse yourself of anything. It's like, oh, it's enough that I have no idea what this is. Suffering is a form of self-accusation.
Meaning accusing you of being the self.
That's right.
Because you have to be the self to suffer, otherwise it's just this and there is no problem.
Right? I don't know. There's no way I could provide you with any confidence in that. It's you. This is just you. I'm just a monkey that scratches his armpits. That's it. You know that you're so. No one has to convince you of that. But you don't know what you are. Or where. Or how. Or when or why. You really don't. But if you dare answer when, why, where, what, how, blah, 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 you're in a dependency relationship with suffering and not suffering. That fast. And this is delightfully inert, suggesting that it doesn't mind if you identify and then try to unravel yourself from the myth of suffering. It's cool with that. It's also quite happy if you don't identify at all. If you don't accuse yourself or it of anything at all. It's also down with that. It doesn't have a dog in the fight.
It's the one that came up with the sentence, it's all good.
Don't worry, be happy.
Yeah.
No. You can begin to see how the self-accusation, right, occurs within a very, very narrow bandwidth. Self-accusation occurs within a very, very narrow bandwidth of anthropomorphization, of reification, as a body and a mind, born in, you know, in a volume, navigating time.
Talking about last night that you only go on certain, really a small range of paths.
Yup.
We don't have anywhere near the spatial possibilities that we're so sure
that
we are
who we are. Yup. Yup. And even that reflex is not something that you're doing or have voluntarily signed up for. This does this. You're not doing it. This is doing itself. For some strange, not even a reason. This, as in you, are curiously intelligent enough to witness your own profound geometry. And as you witness impersonally, impartially, the profundity of your own, right, spontaneously appearing geometry, then who knows? Maybe you're free of, you discover how you are free of affliction. But not as a body-mind, you see?
This is free of affliction, would be a better way.
Yes, this is free of affliction. Tag, you're it.
Because I never get free.
No, association is affliction.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's a, like almost a visceral just falling back into whatever is here.
Mm-hmm.
Rest back in whatever's here.
Yeah.
And give up the grasping. Like just, it would appear there's just no need for grasping, you know.
But even if grasping and association occur, they're not yours. You see, you're not trying to end up in an idealized relationship with this.
Yeah.
You don't give a fuck. Grasp away. Gossip at will. Ignore opportunities to be compassionate. You see? Because as soon as you place yourself in the equation as having something to do or not do, it's an assignment. And once you sign up, you're in a dependency relationship with suffering and not suffering.
Well, it's not like you sign up, it signs you up.
Yes, it does. It signs you up. It signs itself up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Malcolm X said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock landed on us. That's what
we didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning.
Why do people hate that song so much?
Yeah. So you drop yourself. Really? You just drop yourself completely. Ah, this shit suffers. Oh, fuck me, I'm an idiot. This shit doesn't suffer. Good day. One for the Gipper. Okay. Some moments there's wonder. Some moments not. Some moments I'm framing my experience. Some moments not. Some moments I'm a good little Buddhist. Some moments I'm mischievous and putting, you know, hiding everyone's shoes on the roof. This is already doing with you what it pleases. Yes?
Pretty much.
So if this is already doing with you what it pleases, why steer?
Yeah, why steer? We don't have to steer. Why does it feel like we have to steer?
That's a good question.
Such a compelling...
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, you know, the horror stories they were talking about, people doing PCP or acid, like how people think they could fly. The same concept.
And they could, but just for a brief time. They flew.
Yeah.
Just not for very long.
Yeah.
They weren't lying. Yeah. 32 feet per second per second. There's no resolution to the myth of assignment. Assignment just ceases. There's no resolution to the myth of assignment within the dependency relationship of the symptoms of assignment. Assignment just ceases. It explodes or laughs itself out of existence.
I'm on the edge of laughing myself out of existence.
Nice place to be. If there were a place to be, I'll have what she's having.
Mm-hmm. You have to be card-carrying members. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the beautiful body of work of a Shinzen or whatever, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, there's just remarkable clarity and exposition and... Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a swamp of delight. it can be a swamp of delight for someone that has that proclivity and that mind, right? To follow it and be stimulated by it. Same thing with a Peter Fenner or wherever you turn. It's all an absolute swamp of delight if it's speaking right to you, to your persona, your style, your wry sense of humor, your suffering, your commitment to the end of suffering. If it speaks to you, it's like the shit. But you see, it's myth. Myth. What are the Tibetans have this many levels, and Meher Baba has this many levels, and the Jhana guys have this many levels, and you know, the engineers have this many levels, and the physicists have this many levels. Levels of what exactly?
I got an email for him. I guess people donated money for Shinzen's going on a vacation, which he hasn't gone on. A while, and he said, "Oh, I'm going on a honeymoon with some sort of mathematical theory." I'm like, that sounds great. Like, he's just going to study mathematics or something.
Everything here, not that there's anything here, because there's no here here, nor is there anything to fill the not here here, but everything that appears to be here here is fetishizable. So you can go on a honeymoon with fantasy. Forever.
Eternal honeymoon.
Mm-hmm. Go into the electromagnetic torsion membrane of your present experience. Feel the torsion, right? The adhesion and the torsion of your present experience. Like, so? Right? You don't have to make it into a thing. Conscious contact is pretty damn riveting, right? Conscious contact with what appears to be phenomenality that's sourcing from outside you is riveting. Ah, the beautiful sunset. You could say you spontaneously withdraw from externality and go and just plummet right into the adhesion and torsion of your present experience. And it busts out. And it's not your mind that's doing the work, because your mind is just, you know, a fabrication of representation. The mind cannot tell you what's true. Because it only operates within, you know, superficiality, within representation. So you cannot rely on what we call mind to deliver anything of use to you. I mean, you know, if you're going to Chipotle's and you're going to pick up a certain, you know, number of burritos, then you want to take your mind along so you can get there and remember everybody's order. But otherwise, is the texture, the torsion, and the adhesion of your present bioluminescent experiencing saying anything to you? Speaking to you? whispering to you?
Not of anything but the mind gets hold
of. Not a word.
But it speaks in its own, like...
Absolutely. It's insistent.
Yeah.
It's insistent. It's demanding. That's where you go. Isn't it strange? You completely depart from the imaginary world of stuff and self-accusation. You have no interest in it at all. Which suggests you have no interest in what's going to happen to you. You're off the table. But still, what remains is the irrefutability of present experiencing. So you hang out with the irrefutability of present experiencing without representation. Jesus Christ. And you don't want anything from it. You don't want a better experience. You don't want enlightenment. You could care less.
Well, enlightenment's nothing but a mental construct.
That's all it can be.
Something you don't have.
That's all it can be.
Somebody else.
Anybody need anything?
Morphine.
Once you're run out of human motivation to accomplish something spiritual, now you've turned the corner. You're in dangerous territory. That's why you could say so many seekers love and nourish, foment the motivation, the sense of motivation to get enlightened, because that leaves them in the game.
Yeah.
You know, you might point at the black hole from a safe distance and go, ah, ah, right? But you don't want to go anywhere near the event horizon. So it's safer to bounce from retreat and teacher to teacher and teaching to teaching and drug to drug and thing to thing, so that you can keep pointing at the black hole and go, oh, so wonderful, black hole, wonderful, 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 black hole, wonderful, right? And you frame your crappy existence around the fact that you think you're heading, what's the word, pell-mell, right, towards that black hole, when all you're doing is keeping an absolutely safe distance from the event horizon for as long as you can. Fucking posers. But once you run out of human motivation, now you're in dangerous territory. Now that black hole has got you. You thought you were at a safe distance. Snatch, you're in. Now the event horizon is your next bus stop. And after that, good fucking bye.
Well, I guess I always hear that whole sort of why bother, sort of more human kind of attitude, which is sort of, like, without the motivation, if you're not really there, then it can just be, through the human filter, just be like sort of, why bother, defeated, I don't know.
Human motivation is slippery, incestuous.
Yeah.
It'll sleep around. It'll tell you one thing, it'll tell you something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'll get into your pants and then leave in the middle of the night. Right? It's not loyal to you.
Yeah. It's
true. Yep. It's very slippery. One thinks one can rely on human motivation to be a vector for accomplishment. But you can't, because human motivation is just not reliable.
Always suspect.
Yep, always suspect.
We were talking earlier, it can show up or it can just disappear like that.
And does.
You can't count on it.
No. Something happens to your aroma, with or without soap. Your patina.
Yeah.
When you.
Maybe that's what she smelled.
Yeah, could have been. When you turn the corner on human motivation, something happens. There's a certain ferocity. You are touched by a certain ferocity. Because this is taking you down.
How do we know we're not deluding ourselves?
You can never know. But
can
you don't
you?
But you don't but you don't care.
Yeah.
You see? You don't care anymore. Oh, is this delusional? Great. Is it not delusional? Who's to measure?
That's true.
Who could?
Maybe I can fly.
Well, give it a whirl for a few seconds, depending on what floor you leap from. You can.
Bird woman.
Who are you going to turn to as the authority on whether you're being delusional or not? No one outside of you cares. Right? No one cares.
Probably.
Yeah.
Master,
am I being delusional? I don't know.
Most everybody thinks everybody else is being delusional anyway.
That's right.
This is what you should do.
Yeah.
You know what your problem is?
There's no reliable real to contrast your present hallucination with, to say, oh, I'm either being delusional in relationship to that real, or I'm not being delusional in relationship to that real, because there's no real. You have to have a barometer, a measure, to contrast whether you're being delusionally or non-delusionally in relationship with it. But there is no barometer. There is no real. And there's no one that could possibly legitimately say that they're in a position of authority to opine upon your degree of delusion. Because anyone that were to do that would be delusional themselves. Like Samuel Bonder, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not alone. Including his wife. Yeah. and all of his slovenly devotees that all need soap.
You know, there's always those fact checker, you know, like enlightened masters who make the decision, yeah, you're enlightened enough, go teach. You hear about that. Anyway.
Well, of course. Prendergast. Prendergast on the West Coast is a, you know, psychotherapist for a number of years, and he was a Jean Klein student, and he slept around like anyone does, you know. And, you know, he said, oh, my, you know, the finality of my enlightenment happened thanks to Adya Shanti. Mm. I'm like, so sorry to hear that. What a bummer. He was happy about it. I was like, ooh, ouch. What a bummer. But he speaks at the SAND conference.
Yeah. What's the SAND conference?
Science and Non-Duality. I don't remember getting an invitation to speak at the SAND conference. I'll never get an invitation to speak at any goddamn conference. Really?
You're on the naughty list.
I'm on no list. I do not exist in any way, shape, or form. Right amidst that illustrious circle of enlightened personages that, you know, dwell on Earth and have websites. Give me a break. No one's about to invite me to Toronto to address a 12-step group to talk about selfing.
Is he
going to
be in Toronto?
Who knows? I don't know if he does his, you know, he does his East Coast routine. Uh-huh.
If I was that riveted, I would have actually seen him when he was here, but
I'd get around to look at it. It's a total Neil Young experience. Searching for a heart of gold, and I'm getting old.
Is he enlightened?
Neil? Oh, for sure.
Is he what?
Welfare mothers make better lovers. Only an enlightened guy could come up with a line like that. I mean, for me, it's fun to play around with what may appear to be naysaying in a way of just, you know, stripping one bare from all of these superstitions, from all of the, call it semi-conscious loyalty that we have to all of this nonsense. So, you know, you get ripped apart or ripped away from the things that you thought you were invested in to satisfy your enlightenment goal, or how you were supposed to conduct your life to optimize your chances, right? So when you get stripped away from your enlightenment goal, your idealizations, your superstitions, the optimization, your rainbow body, you know, everything that you think you need to commit to, then you have a much better shot. You do. You have a much better shot because now your ass is swinging in the breeze.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not about anything.
I don't believe for a minute I can hoist another onslaught into where I think I'm supposed to get to. It's like not anything.
That's a big shift for the pattern that you knew so well. I mean, that's a radical departure from the momentum that was, you know, wisely, affectionately, sincerely carrying you.
Sure I was getting somewhere. And now I'm quite sure that my endeavors are getting me nowhere, but I'm still doing them.
Well, it's kind of the, you could say it's the way, it's the texture of what you're participating in, right? How you are you know, lighting up around it, or how you're responding to it, or cultivating it.
There's enjoyment of it, but there's not any, what am I going to get, when's it going to show up? It's just, it's got a different texture to it.
Yep.
I think I met you in July, and I went to see Adyashanti in September, and I cried all the way to Omega. I bawled all the way to Omega.
That's a great sign.
I had no idea why I was even going, but I was still going.
Yeah.
And it was like the shedding away of any hope that it was actually going to give me anything, and why the hell am I even doing this?
Yeah.
I've been since. And it's not that big a word. It's just something I
kind of like. It's the crying that counts. Everything else pales in comparison. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there is definitely a... like, it leaves a void. There seems to be a void for a time in meaning and purpose and volition.
That's the good news.
It's like, okay. I mean, there isn't even any oomph to picking on Dave anymore.
So sorry about that.
I mean, I just don't do it, you know? I get grumpy and I'm like, man, deal with it. Quit picking on Dave. He deserves better.
It's not easy being you. It's not easy being a void, immeasurability. It's not going anywhere. You see how you have to invest in the anthropomorphization of your own present experience to then accuse yourself of some kind of suffering, so then you could commit to a package, a vacation package, to end suffering. Something does occur. The reflexes that appear in your experience that have to do with you being a person, and therefore the apparent motivations that those reflexes encourage you, right, to act, to commit, to respond, they just stop showing up. Really. I mean, the reflexes that used to bind and define you as to what you were made of and what you needed to do about it actually just stay, like, you haven't heard from them in a long time.
I start to fizzle out.
Yeah, you fizzle out. You just do. You fizzle out. The reflexes that used to construct your persona and therefore your commitment to how you were going to fix yourself fizzle out.
I'm having, like, 9 people over tomorrow. I can't find an ounce of, oh, my goodness, I got to do this. I don't give a shit. Nobody could show it. It wouldn't be any big deal. And it could be like a total bust, and I wouldn't care. I really don't care. And I'm prepared. The house is ready. But it doesn't matter.
The magic is doing itself.
It really doesn't matter.
Oh, you put out an invitation, some people show up, and see what happens.
And it started not mattering when I showed up to present tonight's schedule. Even for that, it was like, I didn't fret over it, I didn't really care.
That was your big Byron Katie presentation?
Yeah. Jeff rustled up a pretty good-sized group. That was like more people than I've ever seen in the Yellow Barn.
They all just showed up. You know, everyone wanted to get everyone wanted a piece of you, I guess.
No, they wanted a view of you taking a piece out of me.
I don't think so. No, they wanted to have a legitimate presentation of the work.
Yeah. You know. as a presentation goes, it served me very well.
It worked.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, people were down with it. It was a good presentation.
It's funny, I haven't seen Chris again. Just that one time that he came here in the summer.
That's
the only time I've seen him. He's a strange bird.
Yeah. Like a some kind of high altitude Siberian tiger that you know you see once in a lifetime.
I don't know if I characterize it that way.
We don't realize how addicted we are to wanting something to be true. If nothing's true, you're not frameable anymore.
All these things that are true that give us who we are.
Yeah, you,
the
you know, you
safety that we sit in here.
The matrix kicks in, right, as an instantaneity, atemporally. The matrix of self, the matrix of identification, the matrix of anything being true kicks in as an instantaneity, as an inclusivity, which includes, therefore, the assignment that something is happening and it's happening to you. You see? All at once. And it doesn't take time. You're all at once.
So the why bother is just one of those sort of after the fact sort of rationalizations kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's right.
Everything makes sense on planet Nice Guy Sangha. It's just when you go off the planet where...
Could turn out to be a blast. Start with 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, go fast food on it. Well, that's the...
Yeah.
You can say that's the reason, not that you need a reason to, you know, hang out, to play Kiva. You play Kiva, like you play house, like you play doctor. We play Kiva.
What the hell's Kiva?
Kiva's where all the Native Americans go down into the earth so that they can chill out.
Underworld.
Yeah. That's, you know, what the hell else is this?
It's
not like anything's happening.
It's a lodge.
It's a lodge.
It's
the bear den. Yeah. That's how this has always worked.
It's an acid trip.
It is. It's an acid trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how bizarre is it that, you know, people that didn't know each other existed X number of minutes ago, right, make a point of kind of showing up in the same so-called longitude and latitude and play Kiva, play Bear Den.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Works for me.
Yeah, right. It's like an opium den without the side effects.
Yeah, without the consecration. So this
wouldn't
be better if we were really smoking opium.
Would it be better? Absolutely.
We'd be a little less
smoking. Sounds like Bill Withers.
Yeah. just keep on, what is it? Keep on doing me, filling me till you fill me up. Do 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 do. Unicity is very beguiling, immersive. Your present experience is absolutely non-dual, without effort. Sight, sound, all the senses, the thinking, everything is occurring, right, as an absolute inclusive simultaneity. So you are primarily an all-inclusive simultaneity. That you can think, which means create abstract representation. Yes? In the midst of your experience, suggests that there's an entity there. No guarantee. No actual evidence. That thinking, which is the movement of abstraction, representational abstraction, makes it appear as if there's an entity there on the receiving side of an inclusive unicity, of a non-dual unicity. So that hallucination makes your absolute non-dual inclusivity appear dual. Right? Thinking, which is the spontaneous arousal and arising of representational abstraction, makes it appear as if there's an entity over where you are. Because your call it your awareness, your consciousness is also quite capable of receiving thinking. Yes? You're aware that there is thinking occurring. You're aware that there's sound, that there's light, that there's texture. Right? So all the sense windows are aware of their own presence and content. Thinking is also, miraculously also, aware of presence and content. But even thinking is appearing in you as a non-dual, unfractured plenum. Unfracturable. But because thinking has the curious, you could say, texture of being anecdotally or abstractly representational, it looks like you're there. That you're doing the thinking. Right? So that curious mirage only appears to convert non-dual beatitude, non-dual inclusivity into dual. So the duality, which means other, right, self and other, is the apparitional consequence of the miracle of thinking. Because thinking is abstract and representational. But just because thinking is abstract and representational doesn't mean that it's actually creating a world that exists, or that it's creating you as a disparate entity to whom the thinking is occurring. It doesn't actually clobber you from non-duality to duality, only apparitionally so. Isn't it? It is weird. So you forget all about that you are a disembodied awareness to whom, not to whom, but as whom all of this is occurring, as an inclusive unicity, and then you all of a sudden take up residence as a disparate creature to whom this is occurring. You forget that awareness is running the show. You think that the thinking is running the show, or your association with the thinking is what's running the show, and all of a sudden you're an I-me-my. All through the night, I'm divine, I'm divine, I'm divine. Right? Now this geometry, which is not really a geometry because it does not occur in time. the myth of your non-dual inclusivity appearing as a duality to whom events and circumstances are occurring does not happen in time, because there is no time. It's spontaneous, which is really weird. Because no matter how you're experiencing this, it's not causal. No matter how you're experiencing this, is not causal. Because you're only in immediacy. You're not on the receiving end of anything. You're not apart from. You're not a creature to whom this is occurring. But it sure can feel like you are. It sure can feel that, oh, I, thinking, feeling, choosing, deciding, suffering, not suffering, reading, studying, practicing, fasting, renouncing, indulging, addicting, recovering, is all about you. But it's not. Did we close this bar again? We're such drunkards. Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for coming out on a Friday night where you should have gone bowling.
No bowling here.
I don't know why this keeps whistling at me.
Did somebody call?
No, usually that's an email message.
Oh, okay.
But I don't see no emails.
Mercury's in retrograde. That means all this stuff's going to be out of whack.
Oh, Mercury is in retrograde.
Yeah.
I love when that happens. I'm lying. I hate when that happens. Yeah, when did it start?
I'm not sure exactly. I know what's going on now.
Uh-huh.
Travel.
Yeah.
I think I've heard, and it's true, like, it's funny, I have heard from so many people I haven't heard from in, like, years. They all came out of the woodwork.
Cool.
It's like Mercury retrograde says it would.
Is that part of its symptoms?
Yeah, sometimes people come out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You haven't heard from in a while.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't happen, but this time it happens. Have you heard from anybody in the woodwork?
Like your mom?
That'd be trippy.
That would be trippy, right?
I was thinking of your mom today. That was so funny. Yeah.
I think I had a dream about my
parents. Oh, really? That's cool.
I don't think I understood the non-dualism just
it really, it'll kick your ass. Totally kick your ass. The same presence that you've always known as yourself for so long imagines that it is other than itself. Because it's seduced by the miracle, the startle miracle of experiencing. So it insists that someone has to be on the receiving end of the experiencing.
Yeah, like that was the part I always struggled with. No matter how you slice and dice it, it seemed.
Yeah. And for good reason. I mean, you know, the apparent body of evidence is really, I mean, it's crazily convincing. You'd have a hard time going to court, right, and winning that argument. They throw you out. They just bar you. So it's very strange, because you can't say exactly what intelligence is it that just revealed to myself, to itself, that it's not really other than itself and never has been. you can't take any credit for it, because it's not knowledge based. It's not consequential. It's not a tautology. It's weirder. Radiance is really good at saying, "Oh yeah, I'm radiant." Right? It is. Yeah. It's like, "I got this. I'm radiant." But it's strange when it's like still radiant, but it's no longer, you could say, proud of itself.
That one time I went to Arizona where I just there's one time when I went to Arizona where I was reading something and it sort of hit home in a big way. And I was like, okay, there's no, I'm not here. I do that. Anyway.
You think?
Well, it sort of was a little scary because it was sort of like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, I just sort of felt like I was, in retrospect, looking back, caught up and out of control, kind of. It didn't matter. It was an impulsivity or something. Right? Usually. And it was sort of like, okay. And then it was like, I didn't even want to tell anybody. Because, I don't know, it didn't make sense. I don't know how to describe it. And then it was like,
sure.
A room for information.
Egoic enterprise is, you could say, a misidentification.
The misappropriation of consciousness.
Yes, the misappropriation of consciousness. So with the same body of evidence that suggests, right, misappropriation of consciousness, it can also, you could say, feel itself, see itself, witness itself, call it what you will, without the misappropriation. So from let's call it misdirected identity, you could say there's perfect identity. Non-duality might suggest verbally, right, loquaciously, perfect identity. But perfect identity is also myth. Perfect identity with what? And so perfect identity, maybe it lasts a nanosecond, and you go, yes, perfect identity, well, that's the shit. Then there's no identity. So, like, who are you going to send a postcard to? Now, there's no reason why this can't be appearing to itself in, let's just say, three different permutations, simultaneously without collision. Yes? Simultaneously, three completely strange, right, textures with no collision, not being mutually exclusive. Can't it? You can be, you know, egoically charming, occupying the same so-called moment that you are reveling in perfect identity. Occupying the same exact moment where there's no identity whatsoever and you could care less about anything. It's not like you're not even framing that you care or don't care. You so don't care, you're not even thinking you don't care. And it's not about caring either, right? It's not about you caring or not caring. It's like, you got to be kidding. I don't know what this is. And it can appear to itself in the same exact moment, not that there are any, as, right, egoically confused, perfect identity, and no identity whatsoever. And you're not tracking it anymore. Right? It's no longer of an interest of yours to self-assess, well, am I being an egomaniac right now? Or am I enjoying perfect identity, and was it as good for you as it was for me? Or no identity, in which case, you know, you are absolutely unutterable. Why can't it be expressing as all three? And three's ridiculous. How about all 3 billion? 3 trillion. Where's the end? We tend to think in terms of, oh, a state is, right, verifiable. So I'm in this state. Oh, but now I'm in this state. Well, now I'm in this state. We think that it's gradient and exclusive and mutually exclusive. But it's not gradient and it's not mutually exclusive.
Maybe Gabby will get to me crying.
Hold it. Just wait a second. I was almost... I was just there.
Until I thought about the empty mind.
Yeah. Right.
Now it's not empty.
And so, yeah, you can have all of that permutation at hand. But again, there's no collision. So while it appears to be, you could say, full or curiously interested in its own apparitional nature, it also is not suffering from dualistic identity. But it's not also saying, oh, look at me, I'm non-dual. It's what is it? And you can't really even report on it, because the moment you're reporting on it, what are you reporting on? Not what it actually was. You're only reporting on some idea of what you might have thought it was, as it occurred to you in language to say a thing about it, to become representational. Right? But your present experience is not representational. It's not actually occurring. It sure is not occurring to you. You can only feel that it's occurring or that it's occurring to you if you give it, you could say, representational meaning after the fact.
It will
agree. It will obey. Yeah, thank you. It was not going to talk you out of it. It doesn't mind. You want meaning? Bada boom. Bada bing, bada boom. Forget about it.
But it seems like it confirms it.
It can, right? But even that's not at odds. That's not even a collision. See how weird the lucidity is? It's like, oh, this is happening. Is it? To whom? I don't know. Is it really happening? What could I possibly say about it that's true? Nothing at all. 1,000 things. It's like, okay, knock yourself out. Thank you. So you peer into the, call it the immediacy or intimacy of your own profound creativity. And you know that you can't really hold yourself or it hostage. But that doesn't mean you empty your mind or you stop dreaming or that all representational association has to, you know, stop or go cold turkey. You're like, so? but you don't take up residence in what it is or what it isn't, because it's neither or both. You don't take up residence. Let it shine. What business is it of yours? That's curious. It shines. Okay. I get that. Yeah, it shines. It does. This is shining. But what does it convey? anything it feels like imagining. The shining didn't come from someplace. It just shines. From where? I don't know, dude. Right? It shines. It shines from itself, from the void that it is. It shines. I mean, the universe, if there's an observable universe in a volume as the consequence of some event or no event, and it's, right, foreseeably has no boundary, it's just an artifact of the shining. Yeah. And if it turns out that the Earth dries up and you actually get on a rocket ship, I hope you find a habitable planet. I hope you go through the wormhole and end up in a habitable planet rather than that frozen place where Matt Damon ended up. That was a fucking buzzkill.
What movie was that? Was that the
Interstellar.
Oh, it was done. You know
it, yeah. Are you kidding? It's on your list.
You're still getting the fake emails?
What happened? Something's going to happen. Who knows? It's talking.